Blog Talk Radio.
What a matchup!
And what a team, Mike. Metro PCS and the iPhone SE for $0 on a network that covers 99% of people in the U.S. Oh, impressive.
Play with the best. Switch to Metro PCS and an unlimited LTE plan and get a 32-gig iPhone SE for $0. Metro PCS.
Coverage not available in some areas, plus sales tax. Claim based on talk and text. Not valid for active numbers currently on the T-Mobile network or active on Metro PCS in the past 90 days. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Blog Talk Radio.
Us a part of your life at least for 2 hours or so. L.A. Bachelor here, and we got a very good show this evening, and I want to, I was holding out for one of my guests, and hopefully he will join us very shortly. 646-929-0130 is the number to get in touch with us. You press 1 to get on the line if you have questions. If you have a comment, you can hit us up there or on Facebook at Pad Nation, at Twitter at Pad Nation 2, or you can always listen to the podcast of the show. Once the show ends, you can go to our website and listen to the show in its entirety at thebachelorpadnetwork.com, thebachelorpadnetwork.com. I want to go to my guests, both of them on the line. He is a motivational speaker, community activist, and media personality. He's Dr. Lee Bell. And, of course, our residence chief, that's our residence doctor, our residence chief, of course, chief of police in Norman, Oklahoma, he is Chief Keith Humphrey. Guys, I appreciate you coming on this evening, as always.
Well, thank you for the invitation, L.A.
Same here, L.A. I really appreciate it. You know how I enjoy having these conversations with you.
Yeah, and I appreciate you guys always. And I wanted to have you on at the same time because this movement now, first of all, we see lots of chaos. Communities and law enforcement got their hands full in dealing with a lot of tragedy and terror. We see now police are saying that the bombing in Austin, Texas is an act of terrorism. Or serial bomber, at least. And you have all the normals, and I hate to use that word, the normals of pain and suffering that's been going on in the communities. So one of the things that or one of the groups are trying to fight back is the youth, high school kids. I mean, we've seen in some marches, you know, kids my age, you know, kids my kid's age at 11 years old, and so really putting forth an effort to say enough. We don't want to be fearful at our school, at our church, or our dance contests, or anywhere else. It applies with everybody, but it's a shame that, you know, these young folks have to take the lead to try to do something constructively. So my question to you, Dr. Bell, first is what, with this movement, can bring forth change in terms of policy, in terms of a mindset? Because it's not just the politicians, it's parents and others that are not, unfortunately, taking precautions, or maybe not in my neighborhood, won't happen to me, hasn't happened to me, and consequently, school boards not looking at the signs for some of this stuff.
Could you repeat that, L.A.?
Okay. So basically, with this movement, with the youth movement, how much power do they have, can they have, in bringing forth change, not just with policies, but awareness with the school boards and law enforcement, which we'll get to, you know, having more connections and awareness and working together?
I think what they're doing at the present time, making a physical presence with their demonstrations, is a great first step. The next step will be for them to show their voting power in local and national elections. Some of the retailers have already looked down the road and try to appease their future customers. I think it's up to the students now to prove to the politicians that they're doing more than just making some noise. They have to show their political muscle at the local and national polling places. And with some of these celebrities like Oprah putting money behind them, it's another great piece in place, because we know money gets people's attention. And when you have celebrities such as Oprah and some of the others who have stepped up to the plate to say, we hear you, we are with you, we will continue to encourage you, I think all of these things together will matter. The one thing that concerns me is I have not seen a coalescing of this new coalition of folk with some of the existing or tried and true activists of the past. Now, I think if those two groups link arms, and if the students of the day link arms with people like Reverend Barber, I think that the powers to be will have no other, they will have no other avenue to escape addressing the problem.
I want to come back to that, especially the voting part, with you, Dr. Bell. I want to bring in Chief Humphrey in here. And you know, the big concern, as I mentioned, is there's a – we've talked about in shootings not involving kids, if you will, or younger people, but shootings with adults, and the whole gun debate always comes up. And we – I know on this show I've asked you about FBI, local law enforcement, you know, sharing, you know, notes and keeping in contact, having that national and local connect for law enforcement. But what about the schools? And I think that's one of the things that people aren't really talking a lot about. When you look at Parkland, you know, everybody failed these kids. But I think that it seems. But I think that one of the parts of communication is law enforcement locally with the local school boards. And we had you on after this shooting, and you talked about it, like doing a better job. But what is it going to take, or what ideas maybe that you've heard you may have, that law enforcement can do a better job to connect, bearing in mind there are laws in place that don't allow certain things and information to be given to about minors and things of that nature?
Well, I think the main thing, L.A., is that, you know, law enforcement and the school administration, these kids aren't playing. This is this Generation Z. They want to work together. They want an answer. And so I think just not being able to do anything or saying we don't know, that's not happening with this generation. And so it's what it's doing is causing adults that are running police departments, that are running schools, it's forcing them to start looking at, hey, maybe these kids have they've got something. Maybe we do need to start listening to them. Maybe we do need to start respecting what they say. Maybe we do need to pay attention to them when they come to us and tell us that they've got a friend or they know someone who is in trouble or someone who is planning to cause some type of destruction at the school. These kids are not going to go away. And so we have to learn. And I think maybe these adults, and including myself, you know, as the chief of police, maybe, you know, it's time for us to sit down and have these conversations with these kids and listen to what their ideas are. We've got to bring them to the table. We've got to stop this. They don't know what they're talking about, or let the adults handle it. That's not happening anymore. As you can see, there's a different movement coming here. Keep in mind, these are the same kids, this Generation Z and the millennials. They're very analytical. And the things that we did 50 years ago and thinking things are going to get better, this is a generation of kids that are going to continue to push us to get better. They're not going to stop. These are the kids that are voting. These are the kids that have the buying power. These are the kids that are going to be on the school board one day. These are the kids that are going to be chiefs of police. These are the kids that are going to be mayor. And so we have to sit down and listen, and they have a lot of good ideas. I just sit down with a group of youngsters last week that are pushing for a community, a citizen advisory committee here in the city of Norman when it comes to law enforcement. They want a voice at the table when it comes to law enforcement. So I think that's what you're going to start seeing throughout the country. These kids aren't going anywhere, and the politicians and the adults that think they know everything, they're being challenged. They're being asked, and they're being required to answer why they haven't done anything and when are they going to do something.
Talking with Dr. Lee Bell and Chief Keith Humphrey on the pad. Doc, you mentioned voting. Clearly, you know, a 13-year-old can't. Maybe you get into mock voting so they can get used to the information. But what do you do with those who can't exercise that right at this point? How do you get them more engaged? And is it one of those things where perhaps those 18, 19-year-olds, you know, they're about to graduate and even, you know, the college young kids can be more mentors to them and say, look, I'm trying to make a difference. I'm going to exercise my vote because if these politicians aren't going to keep us safe, we're going to vote them out.
One of the things that I have done, L.A., is organize young people. We have taken them to the state capitol to hold public hearings before the legislators on issues that matter to them. And it has been so successful that even the legislators who are not in attendance, there is a written report that is handed out to them. So all legislators have access to this information. We have then come back home locally and assembled most of the leaders that have some kind of authority or touch with children and sit them down and have the children tell them what's going on with them, what they're thinking about, and some potential solutions. And from that activity, we have seen some of these policymakers actually take some of the young people by the hand and say, your testimony resonated with me. Come work with me on this issue. The other thing that we do, we employ the younger kids who are not yet voting age, but we have them intentionally to go home, to go to their churches and other places where they spend their time and talk to people, their parents, church members, church leaders. Tell them what's on your mind. And we encourage them to research, so that when they go before these individuals and these bodies, that they have numbers, statistics, or they have stories that will resonate with the people that they're interfacing with. Sometimes it's a slow process, but it's definitely an empowering process when these young people, as they matriculate up through young adulthood, most of them take these activism activities with them, and at the very same time, it keeps them uninvolved with violence, early sex, drugs, and some of the other risk factors.
We're talking with Dr. Lee Bell and Keith Humphrey. I see you, Reggie. I'm going to go to you in a minute. I just want to make a couple of comments and then ask a couple of questions. The first thing I think is very important of what you both said. I think you both saying, you know, look, this generation X or Z or whatever they're calling themselves now and millennials, they are going to challenge the status quo. They are going to ask questions. They do. Mine do. And they're not even teens yet, you know. And one of the things that I try to do that, Doc, you just talked about is explaining what this is. And a lot, I think, I'm not saying all parents, by all means, never, but I think sometimes we get away from that when tragedy happens, especially. And we have a right to feel safe. You know, they're spending, especially in school, they're spending their time mostly at school, you know, 6 hours or whatever the case may be, depending upon that school. And you know, they have a right to be safe. They're there to learn so they can be beneficial. And I think politicians are, again, I'm not holier than thou, but they shape policy. So they, in essence, can handcuff law enforcement, can handcuff schools. It's almost like the HIPAA law. You guys are familiar with that. Can't give out certain information.
Yeah.
So we're protecting each other, but how far do we protect? So with that being said, and Doc, you can answer that in a sec, but I want to go to Chief and ask him, in terms of safety, not the safety of the marchers. We're going to have someone that's actually going to be at the march on in a little bit, organize it here in Carolina. But the safety of those at the risk of someone wanting to be a copycat. Okay, I won't get them in a school, but now they're out in public, and you have to worry about that. Not just the D.C. stuff, right, where that's going on and they're going, but back at Parkland, back in your community, back in Flint, Michigan, wherever they're organizing, how much is there extra precaution in these type of heightened, you know, emotional situations that are taking place? People, they've been peaceful, so it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. But how much security do you be concerned with when you have these cycle jobs just going out shooting people?
Oh, very serious. You know, we take any of those type of situations, especially that's what I worry about, L.A. I worry about copycatters, and I worry about those individuals that call themselves, they want to be martyrs, and they want to get the attention, gain the attention, even whether they take their own lives or whether they live. They have this sense of importance where they feel like that somebody owes them. And so we follow up every lead. We talk to kids. And I think I've told you before, we have since 9/11, the intelligence network has just really grown, where you can reach out to those federal agencies and statewide agencies and neighboring agencies. And so what we're seeing also is we're seeing police departments contacting cities like Charlottesville, Virginia, when they had that incident. And so when they hear when a city is about to have some type of protest, they reach out to those cities to see what they did wrong. You read after-action reports. You work with your local schools to determine if there's someone out there who's you don't take things lightly. And I've said this before, every city is one incident away from making CNN or national news or world news. And so you take these things very seriously. You understand that people have a First Amendment right to assemble, but at the same time, you understand that everybody doesn't want to assemble peacefully. And there are those opportunities, and you provide the same type of security. You follow every lead. You don't take it lightly. You never say this can't happen in our city. You learn from Las Vegas. You learn from Charlottesville. You learn from Florida. You learn in all these deals. And every day those are continuing conversations within departments and within federal agencies on how to prevent those things from occurring. And that's how you do it. You don't take those type of things lightly, and you protect people as like you would want your family protected. You take them seriously, and you provide the resources necessary to keep people safe. And people have a right to be protected when they have a right to assemble. And if there's somebody who wants to be disruptive, you take care of that individual, and you move on.
Yeah. And Doc, you know, I really believe that, you know, a lot of the policies in place, and some being so archaic, especially with school boards and things of that nature, they hinder law enforcement. They hinder situations like that. I mean, now make no mistake, if the leader of if Chief Humphrey made some mistakes at the top, then Chief Humphrey probably got to go. But I'm saying, as a whole, you know, following up on leads and being able, if this kid was kicked out of school so many times and threatened people and stuff, something had to be done. And it just doesn't make any sense.
Without a doubt, what behooves me is the unequal treatment that is being passed around. The shooter at Parkland, I believe he should have been on everybody's radar screen, whereas little Pookie in Detroit or Flint are getting expelled for an entire year for some very minor transgressions.
Oh, God, I got a couple of emails on that, but go ahead, Doc.
So, I mean, we have to arm Chief Humphrey and his counterparts with some solid policies. I mean, there is a definite red flag when an individual is causing law enforcement to visit them numerous times. The children in my community, in the high school, there are days when I have seen 13 young people taken to jail in handcuffs for what started out as a minor infraction. So we have to do some soul searching, because while our kids are garnering much more attention for what can be some minor infractions, you have another kid from the suburb who's stockpiling weapons. Somebody has to be looking at this, paying attention to the information.
L.A., can I intervene on that real quick?
Sure.
Just real quick. No, I agree with the doc. I agree with the doctor. You know, we started a school resource officer program here 2 years ago. It took us 2 to 3 years to get that program underway, because the main thing that we wanted to push, and we had a concern in our community that they did not want us to start a pipeline to prison once we put officers in the schools. And so one of the things that we worked on for about 2 years is that we are not going to focus on, it's not the police department's job to focus on kids that are wandering in the hallways and kids that want to go to the restroom all the time. We don't focus on administrative things. We focus on those, and then we don't enforce everything. Our main focus is prevention. Our main focus is being proactive. We made sure we got that in place. We also made sure that we put officers in the schools that went through crisis intervention training. And one of the things that I was really, really proud of is that the first year we had the program in place, we had about 13 or 15 students that went into crisis, and these officers were able to recognize that and took these kids to some type of resource where they could get long-term assistance. We take every threat seriously. We had several in the last 2 weeks that we didn't take lightly. I mean, we took them so seriously, we got the FBI involved in them. But these are individuals that are on the radar now. We've established that relationship. Our school police officers have established that relationship with students. And so when we hear this kind of stuff going on, we look into it immediately. When you threaten schools, when you threaten teachers, when you threaten students, you don't get a walk. You shouldn't get a walk at all. You should be dealt with accordingly, whether that's expulsion, whether that's some type of network or something like that, but you can't take it lightly when someone threatens to do any kind of harm to anyone. And that's the thing that I think that happens. You can't make me believe that some of these kids that are on the radar that commit these acts are kids that no one ever that hadn't had some signs there before. That's the thing that bothers me. There had to be some signs, and people ignored them.
Here's the thing, too, and this is a question, and it's kind of a stretch. And, Chief, I know you can't get into, you know, the political side too much and then that nature, but just understanding it as a chief of police. And Doc alluded to it just a minute ago. You know, these policies that Washington and the state and local levels put in place are very biased. And I don't understand why some other people in the suburbs that want to have sort of looser you know, laws, and you will slap on a wrist like in Parkland, but won't, you know, take a look at crisis prevention in the inner cities, because these shootings, let's face it, the chief, you know better than I, are not really happening there. I don't remember any mass shootings in Chicago. You know, we
right.
got enough with them dying on the street. You know, it's metal detectors
right.
that need to be in place. There needs to be some stuff. So even if we expel these kids, say in the inner cities, chief, and I'll go to Doc after that. You know. There has to be a backup plan because they're already in the inner city dealing with all this other stuff, the driving while black, being walking by black. I mean, let's just keep it real. And then they get expelled for something maybe stupid they did, got in a fight, whatever, and then where do they go? They're taking away the boys' clubs. They're taking away all this other stuff in the inner city. And then when these kids get kicked out for something like you both said, you know, could be prevented and may not have to escalate, then they're really losing. Then you do have a problem, an extreme problem, whether it's gangs or whatever else. This president talks about opioid as this mass crisis, and God bless those who die to it. But I guess he did forgot the crack cocaine and stuff that's killing us in the inner city and sending us to jail at the same time. It's a double standard with the policies.
Well, I'll tell you, yeah, and I totally understand that. You know, I face that as a police chief. You know, one of the things, L.A., and Dr. Bell, I'll tell you, I'm a guy that I try to put my money where my mouth is. And, you know, I can't, as a chief of police, I can't wait for other people to do programs and provide assistance. You know, I have a responsibility to provide those programs and find new ways to be interactive and proactive with kids. If we wait on, you know, funding's not there. And so we have
right.
to be creative. And that's one of the things that we always, I see this all the time when it comes to whether it's local government, whether it's federal, whether it's, you know, whatever, is that we don't have the funding. And so we can't do anything else. Well, there's a lot of ways to do things. And I think going back to your initial question, I think these kids that we're seeing standing up for peace, they're gonna force the government to start looking at alternatives that may not even require funding. That's what's gonna end up happening. They're gonna end up fact of, okay, you take away the money, you come up, and they're gonna hold these people accountable. And I think that's what it's gonna take, because we can't, the money's just not there, the funding's not there, so we have to find, you know, new ideas. You know, but it doesn't take funding. When you know that a kid has a problem, it doesn't take a lot of money to find that kid some type of help or address that kid or address that issue. It doesn't take a lot of money to do that. And we fall back on finances and funding as an excuse. And really and truly, the things that – I mean, those are so, there's so many things we could do that we're not doing.
Doc, you know, I totally agree, you know, with Chief. I mean, people need what happened to mentoring kids? You know, that just takes time in a lot of cases. But there is a double standard that's taking place. Like I said, if America in certain parts of these cities, if you will, don't wake up, then these mass shootings will continue to possibly take place.
L.A., I agree with the chief about funding to a certain extent, but again, having young people, we don't just approach young people about protesting and advocating for negative things. We also encourage them, if there's a program that you like, you think is beneficial, you have to push it. People have to know that you think is valuable. So in those terms, we gather funders to listen to these children, and a lot of times they will make funding available to address some of the concerns and some of the proactiveness of the youth. You talked about mentoring. We recruit community members to come into the schools they do have to undergo a background check, but we station them in the hallways. We station them in the lunchroom just to have a presence in the school so that the young people know we have parents and community members greet the kids every morning at the metal detectors, wishing them and hoping that they have a fun and productive day. So all of the things that have been mentioned, they have a place, and they can be a part of the progressive support that we provide to our community, whether it's school, church, or some other venue.
Well, it's, I'll say, like I said, going back to the suburb versus inner city, and Doc, you make a great point. I think that's a great idea, having that presence, letting them know that they care, and having that presence, I think, for those who want to do that, you know, like Chief said, even something minor like not going to class or, you know, hanging in the halls and stuff, that presence is important. I tell you, we had metal detectors. So if something jumped off, it would be very, very hard. You know, I mean, nothing's 100%, but I'm saying, you know, we definitely had some where I grew up in the hood I grew up in. The final question for you both, what would you like to see, Doc, as an activist in dealing with the youth and really being on the ground, you know, fighting this fight? Hell, you're still dealing with Flint with the water crisis, but what would you like to see, say, those communities, the school board, law enforcement, sort of come together to bring forth some change? Because like you both said, you know, the policies, you know, between the NRA and all these other clowns, change may not come right away in terms of that, but there's some things that can be done on the ground to help. So what would you like to see, Doc?
I would like to see more input from our conscious communities. There are resources, churches, other civic groups, fraternities, and sororities that are looking for positive things to do. These groups could serve as mentors. At the same time, they can serve as liaisons to our law enforcement communities.
And you, Chief?
I think the same thing, L.A. You know, being a chief and then being part of a fraternity, I think there's so many resources out here that have such dynamic reputations that really could help start that dialogue. I mean, it's like I said earlier, the resources are unlimited. It's not about the money. It's about, you know, people wanting to do it. You know, just get back to, we talk about wanting to help our kids. We talk about wanting to help our communities. It's time to stop talking, and it's time to just really do it if we care that much about what's going on. It's like Dr. Yeah. Mayo said, the resources are there.
Yeah. Well, listen, I appreciate you both and what you do. Dr. Bell, I mean, your consciousness is helpful to Flint, but to a lot of people, I'm sure, thereafter. And Chief, I know, you know, you got the double whammy. You're a black man as a chief, and a chief as a black man. And you know, you got to deal with a lot of that, those kind of conversations, those kind of talk. But really, it honestly is about these kids being safe, and more importantly, being that generation that's going to hopefully, as you saw in Walmart and some of these other retail places, are trying to keep them in mind and stand up to the NRA and those who think they got to have a machine gun to go shoot Bambi and everything else. So I appreciate your time, and both of you, and we will talk with you very soon. Thank you, and God bless both
LA.
Of you safely.
Well, God bless you too, L.A.
I have to tell the chief, I really appreciate him coming on the show, sharing his insights with us. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, it's an honor. Thank you, Dr. Bell. I appreciate you also. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Love Fest right there. When we come back, we're going to hopefully be talking with our next guest. Should be getting on the line very soon, Daryl Quick. He is the former president of an upstart nonprofit called Take Back Durham, now founder of Brothers and Sisters United. He's going to be taking some young folks to D.C. from Durham, North Carolina, and going to meet up with those young, brave people from Parkland, Florida, and other young, brave people around the country. Try to get Reggie on, and he popped back on, but we'll come back and get him on.
No.
Please do go to our website later on this evening. You can listen to the podcast or the rebroadcast, whatever you want to call it, of the show.